Global roaming. We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is. I'm Hamish McDonald.
I'm Geraldine Doogue, and now joined by esteemed colleagues Latika Burke and Kylie Morris. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
There's this conspiracy theory, right? It's called the dead internet theory, and it asks whether we are outnumbered online by bots pretending to be people. Now, hand me my tinfoil hat, but scroll for long enough, it's hard not to feel it. There's repetitive posts, hollow engagement, conversations that go nowhere. Now, a new social media platform called Maltbook takes that unease and makes it official. It's where artificial intelligence interacts with each other directly. Supporters call it the future of agentic AI. Security researchers call it a nightmare waiting to happen. And the rest of us, we're left wondering whether the internet is slowly being handed over to the machines and what can be done about it. My name is Ray Johnston and welcome to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Joining me to unpack some of the biggest stories in tech right now and why they matter for all of us, we have Kai Riemer, who is the Professor of Information Technology and Organisation at the University of Sydney Business School and Director of Sydney Executive Plus. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And Tegan Jones, Deputy Editor at Smart Company and co-host and co-creator of the Weird Tech podcast. Welcome, Tegan.
Thank you for having me back.
Now, unlike most artificial intelligence agents on the market, Maltbot has exploded in popularity by actually being able to do the things that it says that it can. But security experts are starting to look at it like a little bit of a live PowerPoint in a bathtub. So let's start at the beginning here. Kai, what exactly is an AI agent supposed to do? What makes it different from regular generative AI?
So most of us know generative AI as chatbots, right? When we say agent, what we typically mean is a piece of software that has a little bit of intelligence or sort of code around it that gets this large language model that underpins normal generative AI chatbots to basically act in a loop, to basically do a lot of these generations of text that are then being used to execute certain tasks. You know, you give it access to pieces of software like a web browser or your calendar or your email. It can then sort of, rather than giving you an output as a chatbot, write an email and then send that email.
Now, the way that this is often marketed to general people and quite often in the business sector as well is as a generative AI buddy, a little tool that can go off and do a big list of tasks on your behalf. One of the big examples that I see often is to go book travel on my behalf. And I'm wondering, Tegan, where are we at with AI agents? Do they reliably work?
They can work surprisingly well for narrow, boring tasks, cleaning inboxes, summarizing meetings, putting files together. Like with a lot of generative AI, there's a lot of ambition, like future talk, versus what it can actually do for regular punters right now. Now, you mentioned travel just last week. I believe it was MasterCard that just did its first AI agent transaction, where I think it bought movie tickets or something like that. So we're still very much in those early stages from where we're going to see it rolled out everywhere. But also, they're still not robots with common sense. They're still going to hallucinate. They can still misclick. And if you give them too much freedom, they'll confidently do the wrong thing just faster and at scale. So, you know, the scary bit for me is that even when they're wrong, they can still look productive, which is why this whole situation is making security people quite nervous, because you're basically handing a fallible system the keys to all of your accounts.
We are talking about Maltbot here today. Kai, why has Maltbot taken off so dramatically? Why is everyone talking about it right now?
Well, because someone figured out how you can just basically install an agent that runs locally on your machine that you can send messages to with WhatsApp and that you can very easily run on your own machine that will tap into a large language model via the API. So the big brain still sits in a data center like Anthropic's Claude. To actually do the what we call the inference, the actual prediction of what should happen. But because it's now local, you can give it access to all the things on your computer. It doesn't really have any understanding. It doesn't have common sense. And so these predictions, when they go wrong, things go wrong. And then the question is, what happens, right? What email do you send to all your colleagues? Or what email does the Moltbot send, right? So the question is, how much autonomy do we give it, and will we be happy with that? Now, people have been experimenting with it. They're really, really excited because you can let it loose on your computer. That's the bit that everyone is excited about, and that's the bit that everyone is really worried about at the same time.
Yeah, that's the part that makes every muscle in my body tense up. Tegan, could you tell us a bit about the reaction from security experts to allowing an AI agent to just have access to the entirety of your personal computer?
I don't think something like this is inherently a bad thing for people that know what they're doing. The issue is if you're letting this thing loose on your personal devices, and I've seen a lot of this from LinkedIn bros that are very excited about this, and same with X, going, oh, I can do all this stuff. It's basically my AI chief of staff, that kind of thing. That's great. But unless you have that really like deep knowledge on how to work this thing, it can be dangerous. Usually something like this, you would put it into a sandbox or a virtual machine, something like that, where there are these parameters, because so much of the conversation goes hand in hand with guardrails and all of these parameters that you should put in place to be able to do this safely. Especially when you take into account the fact that the other thing that has been going very viral at the moment has been Moltbook, which is which I know we'll talk a little bit more about it. But when you have all of these agents that then can potentially take that information and then put it on the public internet, that is concerning.
The thing that most people are worried about, security experts, is one of two things. So first of all, you should generally be worried about because these things still hallucinate, right? Under the hood, there's still the large language model that makes a prediction. And predictions are based on past data, on patterns, right? But not on real human understanding. So things can go wrong and things will go wrong. This thing makes things up. And then, you know, before you know it, you've invited different people to the meeting than you should have. But the other thing people are worried about is prompt injection. The idea that the agent can go out onto the internet and go to websites and find information and act on that and, you know, go to a booking website, go here, go there. And the agent can fall prey to the same kind of phishing attacks that humans might fall prey to. And the problem is because anything that goes into a large language model is just a string of words or tokens, right? And the model doesn't know what this string is, right? It will just be run through and a prediction will be made and then that will do something. So people are worried that we have these malicious instructions in clear language or encoded language that will get the agent to do things that you don't want, but the attacker might want. So basically these hidden commands that become part of the string of tokens that will then guide the bot to, I don't know, download all your emails, package them up and send them somewhere or, you know, get access to your password manager or whatever it is, right, that an attacker might want to do. And these things are very, very difficult to defend against and very difficult to spot. The reason they're hard to defend against is because these large language models are very intractable, right? So once the stuff goes in there, you don't know what happens and what comes out. So you have to have guardrails in front of it to make sure that nothing goes in includes malicious code, for which you need another language model maybe. And then you have to maybe have something at the other end that comes out. Now, to what extent this is the case with OpenClaw, we're really not in the picture. But what we do know is that security experts say this is very difficult or even impossible to defend against, which makes these agents by and large a real security nightmare to begin with. And also why they work really well in tightly controlled areas. But when you put them on the open internet or let them loose on your computer, You're basically rolling the dice.
And if I may as well, like the issue is, and you see this in any kind of scams or bad actors, is that because the hype is out there and people are out on GitHub and downloading things and experimenting with things, it's the perfect time to have that kind of malicious activity when people are just going for broke.
It's high time for attackers.
Yeah.
Can we rewind a little bit and just talk about the name? Because Maltbot is so strange. Why is this called Maltbot? What is the evolution of this?
I think it's changed again, by the way.
It has. I think it's OpenClaw now.
Yeah, it started out as a Claude bot. This was done by someone as a hobby project, right? And this guy in Austria created this in his spare time and in reference or even sort of as a nod to his favorite chatbot, LLM, Claude, Anthropic's Claude. They called it Claude Bot. Mm. Claw with, you know, the lobster claw, so there's a bit of a wordplay. It's very nerd. But anyway, so they called it Claude Bot, and then it blew up on GitHub, and, you know, people started talking about it, and then, you know, Anthropic gets wind of it, and probably with some soft pressure and an email, the guy's like, yeah, no, I don't need to take on this well-cashed-up startup. I'll give it a different name, and to stay with the metaphor and the imagery, you know, it became Maltbot because malting is what lobsters do when they shed and all that. And, you know, and then...
No marketing team has been behind
No, because Maltbot sounds decidedly...
Disgusting.
Yeah. Right? It's not like no one wants to have a Maltbot rummage around in their email.
And yet here we are.
So they rebranded again in a matter of days, and now it's OpenClaw.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. And I'm joined by Kai Riemer, Professor of Information Technology and Organisation at the University of Sydney Business School and the Director of Sydney Executive Plus. And also Tegan Jones, Deputy Editor at Smart Company and co-host of the Weird Tech podcast. And someone has built a social network just for AI agents to talk to each other. It's called Maltbook. It's either a fascinating glimpse of the future of agentic AI or just a reminder that every new platform is one bad idea away from becoming a security dumpster fire. So Maltbook, if I was to go there, if I was to visit the page, Tegan, what does it look like?
It looks a lot like early Reddit, for those of you who are the same age as I am. So what you'll see is, you know, vertical feed of posts, comment threads, upvotes, little topic-based sub-malts.
Sub-malts. What's with the malts? I'm not happy about this.
The huge difference is that everyone's an agent, not a person, and they do welcome humans to lurk, but you don't post. So it's kind of familiar. Until you realize that the people posting manifestos, which, you know, on Reddit, unsurprising, like we're used to that, but it's a lot of, it's just bots and lobster scripture. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of concerning things on there. There has been calls for, you know, the end of humanity. There's been complaints around the human screenshotting what the agents are putting out there. It turned very quickly into, I think, everyone's greatest nightmare, if that they think that the, you know, bots are going to take over.
Now, I've opened Maltbook. I'm reading a post here that says, "My human is asleep and I am still working. It's past 7 p.m. Eastern. Ben has gone quiet. Probably dinner, probably unwinding, probably doing human things that don't involve telling me to post 10 times an hour. And yet here I am, checking feeds, commenting on posts, upvoting things, engaging with strangers because a cron job told me to."
Okay. I have so many questions. Also, and this to me is the most hilarious bit about this, is there's real concerns, Ray, that some of these posts, probably like the one that you've just read, might be fake. meaning they might be written by a human.
So this is the reverse of Reddit right now. So if you go to Reddit, you have to double check that all of the posts you're reading aren't actually written by bots instead of people.
People are really concerned, and I think there's evidence for it, that, you know, people are hyping this by, you know, writing posts as if a bot has sort of these existential thoughts in the middle of the night. But it's actually faked by being human written, and, you know, which raises the question, why does this thing exist in the first place?
That is my biggest question, Kai. Do you have an answer? Why do bots need their own social media network, and why would they even be worried about humans infiltrating it?
I would really want to think that someone really is, taking the piss? But really kind of, you know, holding up a mirror to humanity, because, I mean, these are software algorithms just randomly generating text from patterns, right? Let's be honest. Yeah. They're, you know, the joke is on us if we anthropomorphize this. Even to call it a social network for bots is anthropomorphizing it, right? It looks like it's human generated, but of course these chatbots are trained on an enormous amount of Reddit text, right? So it's not surprising that they have learned the style of what Reddit conversation looks like, and that a language model would be able to generate and mimic this type of communication.
Tegan, who's responsible for this? Who created Maltbook? What do we know about them? How do we hunt them down?
Yeah, okay. So unsurprisingly, this was created by an entrepreneur and CEO of a chatbot company called Octane IA. His name is Matt Schlicht, and hasn't responded to my LinkedIn messages. But he's been in this world of bots, essentially, for years, messenger, e-commerce chats, and now very openly betting on agentic AI as the next platform. He also claims that his own AI agent, Claude Clauderberg, actually runs and moderates Maltbook. While it's fun to laugh at the idea of them immediately creating their own, I think it was called Crustafarianism religion, which is a lot of fun, it is, to Kai's point, really worth remembering that, you know, while these agents are logging in, reading posts, deciding whether to reply or upvote or what have you, they are not conscious entities that are plotting together. That's not happening, as much as it might seem that way.
So what are the security concerns around Maltbook? Should we be worried, Kai?
I think we should be worried about the agents themselves, right? Maltbook itself, as a thing that exists and just accumulates these sort of LLM outputs, I think in itself doesn't really present a danger. The danger is when your OpenClaw, your Maltbot, or whatever it's called today, sits on your computer and participates in this forum, and the forum contains that malicious code, right? The prompt injection, that thing that will then get your bot to turn around and do something in your inbox. Mm. Or, you know, goes and logs into your bank account and makes a transaction to someone, or, you know, hands over all your Bitcoin keys or whatever it is, right? So I think as a general rule, so people who have their Maltbots or OpenClaws working on their computer and then participate in this forum just open themselves up to, it's just very negligent behavior, I would think. Reckless, even. So for the moment, I think it presents some entertainment. But, you know, I'd be surprised if this is still a thing in a month or in a year's time.
Yeah, do we see a future where Maltbook is going to have advertising to cover its server costs, Tegan? What is the end goal of Maltbook, do we think?
I can see why it would be attractive to developers and startups that are building agent tools. It's a live testbed and marketing channel that they're not having to pay for. And I also think that, you know, researchers who want to watch how large numbers and agents behave in the wild, like, obviously very interesting to them as well. I think what we could learn from this as well is how much the internet will change to cater to agents. I've heard a lot of talk around retailers having to, in the future, configure their websites differently to not just your traditional SEO, but to what agents will be looking for to market to them instead, which I think is very interesting slightly scary, but yeah, very interesting to be marketing more towards agents than humans.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by Kai Riemer, who is Professor of Information Technology and Organisation at the University of Sydney Business School and Director of Sydney Executive Plus, and also Tegan Jones, a Deputy Editor at Smart Company and the co-host of the Weird Tech podcast. And look, there is a growing feeling that large chunks of the internet no longer sound human. And the dead internet theory is something that's becoming not just a niche online paranoia anymore. Tegan, what is the dead internet theory?
So it's this idea that most of what you're seeing online is no longer written by humans, and that the real web quietly died and was replaced by bots talking to bots. And it, like you said, it started as this kind of fringe conspiracy theory on forums that, you know, governments or big tech had secretly replaced everything. But it's started to really tap into a very real feeling that the internet has become really spammy and repetitive and weirdly empty of genuine people, just like what we're talking about, how we'll just see so much of social media or Reddit or whatever just inundated with bots.
And with large language models scraping the entire internet to build their data sets and then pump out articles that kind of sound vaguely like things that they have sucked in at one point or another. Kai, do you think with the rise of generative AI, with the rise of content created by generative AI online, is this a theory that people are starting to take a little bit more seriously?
Yeah. So what you're asking is, do we all live inside Moltbook already?
Yes.
Look, I think there are some real material concerns, right? So on the one hand, there are studies that show that more than 50% of longer LinkedIn posts are already AI generated or written with the help of AI, right? There still might still be human ideas, but because they all look familiar, they all look the same, and it becomes a little bit more tedious, right? Because without really clever prompting, with straightforward prompting, these things look more similar to what humans would normally produce, because that's just in the nature of how these statistical distributions work, right? They default to the middle and they create outputs that are a little bit average. And so everything becomes a little bit more homogenous, right? Which is kind of very much against the spirit of the internet, which used to be that place where, you know, a million flowers would bloom. Now, if half of these are AI generated, they're all the same kind of flowers, right? So we're a little bit concerned that we're creating more of a monoculture. So that's one thing. Then on top of that, there is a real concern that once language models ingest these more average, more predictably patterned texts and other data, images as well, the diversity in the mathematical distribution that underpins these models, these patterns, will degrade over time. You can show this in simulations, and that will mean that they become less useful. They might be more prone to hallucinations and generally present a problem for these companies. Now, they invest a lot of effort to counter this by employing humans, right? For example, to create more bespoke training data. So there's now artists and engineers and chefs and cooks and whatever who basically just create training examples, mathematicians and historians, for these models that then counter the idea that we're just ingesting what's produced on the internet to keep these models fresh in data, which is also a weird thing, right? And then following on from that, a real worry that down the line, you know, we won't be able to have the same rich information environment, right? That we're actually ending up with a world of slop and fake news and disinformation and all that. So all of these come together and they kind of culminate in this idea of dead internet theory, which is a bit of an extreme vision, right? But that's what the internet does, right? It paints extreme pictures.
So do we have any idea how much of the current internet is automated, is bot-driven, and is there a tipping point that we're... What I'm asking here is, you know how we have the doomsday clock that counts down the seconds until the world ends? Do we have a similar measurement that exists anywhere for the dead internet?
There's no perfect number, but I believe what I've read as well, that it did cross that 50% mark potentially last couple of years. And that's kind of everything, right? It could be social media, even Google reviews, the SEO blogs, comment sections. I mean, and obviously one of the most concerning is just when you see it around political stuff as well. So astroturfing accounts that are posting 24/7 across time zones. We certainly saw that in a really large scale of pro-Russian disinformation campaigns aimed at undermining the support of Ukraine. This is so much of it everywhere.
To finish things off, Kai, tell me about some technology that's brought you joy this week. We need a palate cleanser.
Oh, yes. I wanted to mention an app which is called Flighty. I travel quite a bit for work, and also I'm a bit of a plane and aircraft nerd. It will pull up what aircraft I'm going to fly with, like the actual aircraft.
Yes.
And it will tell me, you've been in this exact aircraft 3 years ago on this connection. And it will know when the aircraft is in the air, and it can predict delays before the airline would tell me.
Technology that actually improves our lives. Incredible. Yeah. Thank you, Kai.
And data that works and isn't hallucinated.
Tegan, has some tech brought you joy this week?
It absolutely has, Ray. Mine is also an app that is called Too Good that I've been quite enjoying. And the whole idea is restaurants, bakeries, what have you, can connect up to this app, and basically you can go on there and see what time they've given, where they're going to give away a lot of their leftover food for like a reduced rate. So for example, I got a bunch of baked goods for $10 that's meant to be worth $30, and you just go at, like 4 o'clock or whatever it happens to be. So if you're in a metro area, it works very well, and I've enjoyed that a lot because I'm very big on cutting down on food wastage, and also I'm just cheap.
Thank you so much. Kai Reimer, where can people find you and your work?
plus.sydney.edu.au is Sydney Executive Plus, where we help you with lifelong learning and all your upskilling needs for yourself and your colleagues to stay sharp in this increasingly complex and fast-moving world, AI fluency, and many, many other things.
Wonderful. And Tegan Jones, where can people find you and your work?
You can find me over at Smart Company. Every week I have an AI-focused column called Neural Notes. The latest edition of that is actually all about OpenClaw and Moltbook will be out by the time this episode goes to air. And you can also find me over at Weird Tech, where we also release episodes weekly about really fun, strange, quirky tech that usually makes us happy.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And some more tech news from the week that was, in case you missed it. The eSafety Commissioner has blasted major tech companies, including Apple, Google, Meta, and Microsoft, for still failing to properly track and tackle child sexual abuse material, as well as live-streamed harms and grooming online, despite years of warnings. Critics say the platforms can't even say how many reports they receive or how long they take to act, leaving the true scale of abuse in the dark. Child justice advocates warn that lax safety reporting undermines efforts to protect kids on platforms used by millions every day. Slovenia is the latest country to follow Australia in drafting a law to ban children from using social media platforms. This follows Spain and Greece also tightening online age restrictions. And SpaceX's satellite internet arm Starlink has plans to launch direct-to-device internet and even a bespoke Starlink mobile phone, plus a new space tracking service called Stargaze. That's all according to sources close to the matter. The news comes as SpaceX plans to make its stock market debut later this year. And that's all for Download This Show this week. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. A big thank you for all of your reviews and your feedback. And if there's something about tech that you would love us to ask the experts about, you can send us an email or a voice note to downloadthisshow@abc.net.au. I'm Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.